refrigerator. Okay, so we are starting. Okay, I'm gonna try to put this in my back pocket. We'll see how this works. Olivia. Okay, so we are on page 270 at the top of the page. I'm actually gonna go back a page. I don't wanna start, I'm gonna start with and rid yourself of anything you might have learned in the castle. So page 269 at the very bottom, okay? Everybody with me? And rid yourself of anything you might have learned in the castle, of learning, of culture, of skills. There's an orphanage in Karchar, not far from here, but back within Karthia's borders. It's run by a woman whose reputation is good, Mrs. Turbledy. Now you must understand that I cannot have payment made to her for your care. You go there as an orphan, without any advantage over the others. It'll be a hard few years until you're of age and can live on your own. Tears stung Jaren's eyes, but he pushed them away. He wouldn't give his father the satisfaction of seeing his pain. If Ekbert noticed his son's breaking heart, he didn't acknowledge it. He gave Jaren a handful of silver coins. Come up with a story to get yourself into the orphanage. Say you stole these or whatever excuse you'd like, but they will buy your way through the front doors. I can fake an illness when the coins run out, Jaren said. Let her think she's got the truth from me. Ekbert smiled. You use that trick often enough on your tutors. What an irony that it may keep you alive now. There is always the possibility of Mrs. Turbledy trying to sell you into servitude, but I don't think she'd find any buyers. No, Jaren agreed. I'm too difficult for anyone to want me. Exactly, his father said. Can you imagine? I just want you to imagine that you look at your parents and say, yep, I'm too difficult for anyone to want me. And your dad says exactly. What does that sound like to Jaren? That his father doesn't even want him. And that's what's going on right now, right? His father is sending him away, is saying, you're going to live on the streets on your own. I'm not helping you. Right? This was like a final blow, right? The full meaning of Jaren's words probably didn't occur to him, which almost made it hurt worse. Ekbert untied a small satchel at his waist, which he pressed into Jaren's hand. I have a gift in there for you, the best of anything I could offer. There is a letter instructing you on how to use it. Jaren looked in the satchel, then closed it up again. It meant nothing to him. When Ekbert stood to leave, Jaren placed a hand over his father's arm and whispered, stay a little longer. If I do, the priest will grow suspicious, Ekbert said. This is real then? Jaren's heart pounded, though he couldn't tell whether it was from sadness or fear for his future. When you leave, I'm no longer Prince Jaren. I'll be nothing but a commoner, an orphan. You will always be a royal in your heart, Ekbert said tenderly. There may come a time when you must be Prince Jaren again for your country. You will know if it does come. Am I alone? Ekbert shook his head. I will come in disguise on the last day of every month to the church nearest Mrs. Turbledy's orphanage. If you ever need to see me, I'll be there. Then he left. And from that moment on, I became Sage of Avinia, orphan son of a failed musician and a barmaid who knew little of the king and queen of Karthia and cared even less, completely alone. My head snapped up as our carriage bumped over the rock in the road. Connor, sitting in a seat directly opposite me, watched me with obvious disgust. I knew he hated having to choose me as his prince, but Tobias, who was asleep on my right, was a complete failure, and Rodin, sitting up straight on my left, could not convince the regents. Imogene was on Connor's left. She stared straight ahead, refusing to acknowledge that she saw anything at all. Mott sat on Connor's right and nodded slightly at me when I looked at him. There had been no point in lying any further to Mott. Back at the river, he hadn't asked whether I was the prince. He knew it. And he knew by my reaction that he was correct. Undoubtedly, he had 100 questions to ask, and there were so many things I wanted to tell him. Just to have somebody to speak openly to. But Connor was anxious for us to leave, and there was no time. All I had asked of Mott was that he keep our secret to himself. Judging by Connor's sour expression, he had obeyed. Okay, Mott knows who he really is. So where does Mott's loyalty now lie? With Connor or the royal prince? So who is he going to listen to before the other one? Prince. Yes, if Jaren asks him to do something, he is going to do what Jaren asks before Connor, right?
But before he knew that,
he would have went with Connor, right? I leaned back and closed my eyes again, not to sleep, but to be alone with my thoughts. After 4 years of pretending, of immersing myself so completely in Sage's identity, could I emerge convincingly as Jaren? Connor's regimen of lessons in the past week actually had been helpful. I had forgotten the names of several court officials and even a few of my ancestors that a prince would have expected to know. As a boy, I had been well trained in both sword fighting and horseback riding, both which were as instinctive to me now as breathing. Although I had practiced whenever possible in the orphanage, those skills had softened over the past 4 years, and it was good to build them up again. Even though I was pretending to sleep, I couldn't help but smile at the memory of Cregan's anger when I challenged him to his wildest horse. The horse he'd brought me out of the stables really was beyond my skills to train, and I was barely able to control her enough to steal the fake sword while everyone was distracted elsewhere. Other things had been a waste of time. Obviously, I could read much better than I let on, though to have confessed that would have been disastrous for my disguise. I'd have to apologize later to Tobias for that lie. He would have secured his papers more carefully if he had known I read every word on them while he slept at night. Of course, my back still stung from where he'd cut me, and that was a far worse crime. I'd agree to forgive him if he forgave me. There were a lot of things I'd have to ask forgiveness for, and I feared I wouldn't receive half as much as I wanted. Not from Imogene, who had trusted me with the greatest secret of her life that she could speak. I had trusted her with nothing. Not from Amarinda, who pled with a broken heart for any truth about whether Darius, the prince she was betrothed to, had lived and loved, was alive, or about the existence of his younger brother, whom she would eventually have to marry if Darius really were dead. And I'd get no forgiveness ever from my mother, who went to her death believing I died in an attack by Avinian pirates, nor from my father. For most of the past 4 years, I blamed him for keeping me away from the castle. True, I'd accepted his request without argument, but how could I have known then how difficult these recent years would be? He would have known much of what was ahead of me, and still he chose peace for his country over his own son. Maybe it was the right thing to do, I still don't know for sure, but it didn't diminish my shame that they'd had to send me away in the first place, nor my anger at my father, who at his first reunion with me in the church already had a plan to keep me away. I returned every month to the church near the orphanage to see my father, but I never let him know I was there. We never spoke again. It was only after Connor told me that both my parents and my brother had been killed that I began to understand my father in a new way. He had said that his greatest enemies were the regents. Connor had told me that all three members of the family were intended victims, so that the regent would have to be crowned. While at Farthenwood, I slowly began to understand that as long as 4 years ago, my father had foreseen the possibility that all of them would be murdered one day. He didn't keep me away to protect himself from embarrassment, nor was it to avoid having to declare war on Avinia. My father kept me away to keep me alive. After pirates had tried to kill me, he must have worried that the rest of his family's lives were in danger. He told me in the church that day the royal line must continue to save Carthia, so that if the worst happened and they were all killed, I would remain to claim the throne. He'd even given me a way home. I just never expected to meet it. He had to let me think the worst of him for over 4 years, and I had eagerly done so. For that, I could never have his forgiveness. When Connor first brought me to Farthenwood, I had thought he knew that Jaren was alive and he was searching for the prince, hoping to use him for some sort of ransom. So I was determined that he must never suspect my true identity. That would have been bad. But Connor's real plan was far worse. He was hoping to fool the entire kingdom with a fraudulent prince. I knew then that the best course of action was to play along with his plan, get him to choose me on my own terms, then return to Drilliad to prove my identity. Connor had his plan and I had mine. Whether either of them would work remained to be seen. Connor kicked my feet to get my attention. "We're nearly there," he said. "Straighten up and at least try to look like a prince." "Are we going to the castle this late at night?" I mumbled while glancing out the window into the darkness. "Of course not. We'll stay at an inn. The choosing ceremony is tomorrow evening." "If we're going to the inn, then I go as I am." I slouched back into my seat. The charade of being sage was nearly over. I planned to enjoy it as long as I could. We stopped at a place known simply as the Traveler's Inn. It wasn't far from the castle. Nobles not invited to stay within the castle walls often slept there. I told Connor it was too fancy because they'd only expect people of wealth and influence to stay there. The irony amused me and escaped him. Gosh. Oh, can you imagine? What do you think Connor's going to do when he realizes what he's done? Think of how he's actually treated the real prince.
And,
You forgot already? Has it really been that long? I am a person of wealth and influence, Connor said, irritated. My face is known, so I won't have anybody wonder why I'm staying at a commoner's tavern. And nobody will look at you if you keep your head down. Mott stayed with Roden, Tobias, Imogene, and me while Connor went inside to reserve three rooms for us. I wondered, as I stared at Imogene, whether she would run away if she had her own room, but then dismissed those thoughts. She had no money to support herself in a strange town, and besides, she would likely consider it dishonorable to run. Why bring us along? Connor asked me after Connor had left. Will you enjoy having us watch in humiliation as you're declared? He saved our lives, Tobias said. He brought us along to make sure Connor didn't have us killed back at Farthenwood. Tobias is right, Mott said. Cregan told me his orders were to kill the two boys left behind. Roden folded his arms and arched his head. Cregan wouldn't have killed me. He wanted me to become the prince. That isn't Cregan's decision to make, Tobias said. Besides, Mott said, you'll understand in time that Connor's decision was the right one. I flashed Mott a glare. That was going too far. He lowered his eyes and said nothing more. What's she here for? Tobias asked, nodding at Imogene. Then he smiled. Oh, you'll use her to convince the princess. And Mirinda would never suspect her of lying. Imogene flushed and stared at me with hatred in her eyes. It was nearly the same accusation she had already made to me. After I'm declared, you're all free to go, I said. All I ask is if there are any secrets between us, that you keep them. I don't believe you, Roden said bitterly. We're too dangerous with all we know. Why is he not worried about them?
He's like already the prince.
He's the prince, so they're not. What secret are they keeping? Right? Mm-hmm. So is he worried about these guys being alive?
No.
Not at all. They just don't realize that yet. So you'll excuse me if I wait to see whether we walk free before I celebrate your generosity. You're excused, I said, and slumped down again and closed my eyes. That didn't last. Connor returned only seconds later. There are no rooms available in all of Drilliad, he said. It cost me more than three rooms combined to take the reservation of a man who should have arrived by now. Bribing the innkeeper to claim his messenger never arrived to make the reservation was enormously expensive. Only one room, I asked. What about Imogene? She'll sleep out here in the carriage, Connor said. No, we will, I protested. A lady won't be treated that way. She's no lady, Connor said. She's my kitchen maid, whom you are in the process of stealing away for yourself. She won't belong to me any more than she should belong to you right now. She takes the room. A wicked glint sparked in Connor's eyes. He smiled and offered a hand to her. Very well, my dear, come with me. I swatted his hand away, and Mott sat forward, saying, I'll stay in the carriage with Roden and Tobias to make sure there's enough space in the room. You can give Imogene the second bed and hang a sheet for her privacy. Connor and Sage, you can share the rest of the room. It was an acceptable compromise. Imogene didn't seem happy about it, but it was the best of her options. She refused either my hand or Connor's to help her out of the carriage and followed Connor and me into the inn. As we walked, I asked Connor why the inn was so full. Keep your head down, he hissed. The rumor of the deaths of the royal family has spread throughout Carthia. Everyone has come to see who the new king will be tomorrow night. Are you still confident in your plan? Less confident than I was, Connor whispered. I didn't anticipate so much competition. You'll have to do a very good job tomorrow in convincing them. A grin spread across my face. Don't worry, I will. What do you mean? He's been in the orphanage. But he's always had that coin roll. Like, it's just something that he obviously learned as a kid and he kept it up. So that made him it was easy for him to transfer that garland roll into a pickpocketing skill. Okay. Plus, I don't think that he just picked it up, but I can see Jaren completely pickpocketing royals and all the people that visited the castle, correct? I'm sure he practiced on his tutors and his, what are they called? The people that normally take care of the children of royals, because it's not normally the royal family. What are those people called? Nannies? Nannies. I'm sure he pickpocketed those babies a lot. Can you imagine how many of those they had to replace throughout the years? Sage had to have driven them crazy. Or Jaren. I'm always impressed when I make it to the point where you find out that he's Jaren without me calling him Jaren, just in case you guys are wondering. Watch my mouth. It wasn't a large room, but it was clean and pleasant and would be enough for the three of us for one night. Two small beds stood along one wall. I helped Connor push Imogene's bed against the opposite wall, then quickly offered to sleep on the floor. I'm still an orphan and you're still a noble, I said to Connor. You should have the other bed. Of course I should, and watch your tongue when saying I'm still a noble. I will always be a noble if you hope to remain a prince. "My mistake," I said, putting on whatever expression of humility he would expect to see. Oh, Jaren's going to be king. What can he completely do to Connor?
He can kill him, or he can...
Okay, tell me, is Jaren going to kill somebody?
No, he's going to put him in the dungeon.
How do we know he's not going to kill somebody? Think about how he reacted when he accidentally killed that guy, right? He took that so badly. He will not kill Connor. But did you see what he just said? "I'm still an orphan and you're still a noble."
He's going to put him in the dungeon.
Or he doesn't even have to do that.
He can,
kick him out, right? He could just say, "I'm taking your regency away from you and your titles." A king can do that, right? Plus... oh, it's going to be really awful because the real...
DNA test.
Back then, they did not have a DNA test. No DNA test.
How can he actually prove it?
He said his father gave him away to come home. Didn't you hear that? We just don't know what that is. Okay. Imogen and I took a sheet off her bed and hung it from the ceiling. It wasn't a perfect solution for her privacy, but it was the best any of us could hope for. She removed one of the blankets from her bed for me to sleep with on the floor. I put myself directly between hers and Connor's beds. He noticed. "You think I'd try any mischief with that disgusting girl? I knew her mother, who was worthless too. Imogene's safe with me, boy. It's you she should worry about." I let that comment pass. No doubt she was worried about me, but for entirely different reasons. It was very late at night when I heard her roll off her bed onto her feet. Connor's snoring was ferocious, so it was no surprise that he didn't hear her and wake up. She stepped from behind the hanging sheet and touched my shoulder. I sat up, and she put a finger to her lips, then motioned for me to follow her. In the chance that Connor did awaken, I positioned my blanket so that in the darkness it would appear someone was here. But I'd learned from more than one time in his presence during the night that he never woke up. Once on Imogene's side of the makeshift curtain, she pointed to the window. "Are you too warm?" I asked. "Can you take me out there?" she whispered. "Is it safe?" I inched the window open, examined the wall in the moonlight, and nodded. In typical Carthian style, a ledge had been built directly below the window. I crawled through the window first, then helped her through. The night was cool and the breeze had picked up somewhat, but she didn't seem to hate me right now, so it was probably one last chance for any private conversation. We sat on the ledge and leaned against the wall of the inn, letting our legs dangle below. "Do you often go out on ledges at night?" I asked. "You do. I saw you once crawling around the walls of Farthenwood." She shrugged and said, "I don't think you saw me watching you, though." I hadn't seen her, which was amazing, because I'd always watched carefully for anyone below me on the grounds. "I couldn't sleep," she added. "All I could think was about was that carriage ride. Rodin is so angry with you." "Is he?" "With so much cheerfulness in that ride, I barely noticed." She ignored that. "Doesn't he understand why you brought him? What would have happened if you'd left them behind?" I was silent. It was nothing new to have someone mad at me, but Rodin's anger bothered me, and I couldn't quite figure out why. "Back at Farthenwood, I said horrible things to you," Imogene continued. "I don't know why I said them. Maybe I deserved some of it." "No, you didn't. I blamed you for my own worries about coming to Drilliad, leaving the safety of Farthenwood. But now that I'm gone, I can't imagine returning there. Anything is better than Farthenwood." She lowered her eyes. "I'm sorry. I should have trusted you." I deserve no trust, and yet she asked my forgiveness? Could she see me in the darkness and know how her word bit into my heart? Or did I have no heart, no soul? Connor had said we must prepare to sacrifice our very souls to bring Prince Jaren to the throne. I had done just that, although not in the way Connor thought. "Are you nervous about tomorrow, Sage?" "Yes." Even with the truth on my side, there was so much that could go wrong. "Don't be. You look so very like him in that painting that they're sure to accept you. I watched you as we rode in the carriage. If I'm not careful, I may begin calling you Jaren myself." "Would you?" For reasons I couldn't explain, even to myself, I longed to hear someone call me by my real name. I was tired of Sage. There were so many things I disliked about him lately. She hesitated a moment before smiling. "Right now, what am I supposed to call you? Jaren, or Prince, or Your Majesty, or what?" I shook my head. They all sound so wrong for me. But after tomorrow, there will be no more Sage, only Jaren. Her smile fell. I could see the curve of her mouth by the light of the midnight sky. "I won't know Jaren. Don't make me give up Sage yet." There was nothing I could say to that. A wisp of her hair blew in the nighttime breeze. I caught the hair and tucked it behind her ear. She smiled, then reached for a pin and fastened it again, always maintaining her neat servant's braid. I wondered if she could ever learn to see herself as something other than a servant, something greater. "We should probably go inside," Imogene sat up straight. "I can't imagine what would happen if Connor found us out here." "We're not doing anything wrong," I said, "and I'm not afraid of him, but I am. Will you help me in?" I stood, and when my footing was secure, I helped her to stand. But instead of turning to re-enter the window, she faced me. "Back at Farthenwood, you told me there were more things happening than I understood. What did you mean by that?" I pressed my lips together, then said, "I meant that there's a big difference between acting like a prince and being a prince. If you see me after I'm crowned, will you try to talk to me as Jaren? Can you do that?" Without answering, she crouched down to the window. Before she returned to the room, she paused and said, "You'll become a king tomorrow, the most powerful person in the land. And I'll still be Imogene, a servant girl. After tomorrow, it will no longer be appropriate for me to talk to you." Before I could answer, she disappeared through the window. By the time I climbed through and shut it tightly, she was already back in her bed. Her message was clear. I was a prince now, and she had returned to becoming Imogene the Mute. Morning came early. I barely slept, if at all. That'll be me tonight. Eighth grade play tomorrow. I won't sleep tonight. One thought after another had tumbled through my mind faster than I could make sense of it. For most of the past 4 years, I had accepted the idea that I would be Sage for the rest of my life. Letting that go and allowing myself to be Jaren again was more difficult than I had anticipated. I was already awake when Connor tried to kick me into consciousness, so his foot hit my hands and nothing worse. Then he called for Imogene to wake up and go downstairs to order us a breakfast. Ours was to be served in our room. Then she could take something to the boys in the carriage. He gave her no instructions on when she should eat. "We'll stay here in the room until it's time to leave," Connor said. I've only got hours left to prepare you for the presentation." "I am prepared," I grumbled. Connor smirked at me. "I would have expected more humility from you today. Our highest priority is to rehearse the order of action tonight. And don't try to tell me you know about that." I didn't. "Tell me then. Get dressed and straighten this room first, or else the maids will wonder about our arrangement last night. I have a few duties for Mott to attend to this morning that I must speak with him about." By the time I dressed and replaced the hanging sheet in my blanket on Imogene's bed, Connor was returning with Imogene behind him. She carried a tray that she set on a table in her room. I wondered if she had risked speaking to the staff to order our breakfast, or if not, how she had communicated our order to them. "Maybe it's a good thing you brought her along," Connor said. It's handy having a traveling servant." "I thought that's what Mott is for," I said. "He's more than a common servant. Surely you've noticed that by now." Imogene left as quickly as she could, and Connor handed me a plate filled with hot cakes, eggs, and thick slices of bacon. "It's a large breakfast," I said hungrily. "This is nothing compared to what lies ahead for you," Connor said. "Once you're the prince, you may tell your servants anything you wish to eat, and they will provide it. They will feed it to you if you desire." "I don't. There's no need to tempt me for the position, Connor. You have me. Now tell me about court tonight." "All 20 of the king's regents will meet in the throne room at 5:00. Also, there will be the king's closest advisor, the High Chamberlain, Lord Kerwin. No need for you to know all of their names. Jaren likely would not have known them, so no one will expect you to." I didn't know all of them, but there were some I expected to recognize. Kerwin would know me best. He'd suffered through my childhood besides my family. He would recognize me, would he recognize me after all this time? It was doubtful. I changed a lot in 4 years. Connor continued, "The first act of the meeting will be to officially announce the deaths of the king, queen, and the crown prince, Darius." I winced at that. Connor didn't notice. He never had before either. If you go back to any time that his family's deaths are mentioned, Sage reacts every single time. And it is just so minuscule that until you know who he is, you don't realize it. Okay? "The announcement is merely a formality. Most of the regents have known this from the start. And the others will have heard enough rumors to confirm the likelihood in their minds. Then we'll have a report from the three regents who traveled to Avinia to seek any news as to the life or death of Prince Jaren. They will report a confirmation that he's dead." "How do you know?" I asked. "Because he is dead," Connor snapped. "Who do you think hired the pirates so many years ago?" Who hired the pirates? Connor hired the pirates. The news knocked the wind from my lungs. It overwhelmed any sense of pretense I'd been able to maintain thus far with him. All that kept me from attacking him was the knowledge that I still wanted him with me at the castle tonight. Why? My voice was hoarse. I didn't trust myself to say anything more. I thought it would force us into war with Avinia. Ekbert stood by and did nothing year after year while Avinia inched its way deeper into Carthian lands. But if Avinian pirates killed his son, he'd be forced to act. Unfortunately, despite the pirates' assurances to me that everyone on that ship went down, Jaren's body was never found. Ekbert was able to appease his critics by saying he wouldn't go to war until he had Jaren's body as evidence in the attack. However, Avinia has backed off since their suspected involvement in Jaren's death. So in a way, my plan worked better than I could have hoped for. Our borders are safer and no war was needed. Connor paused as if he expected me to say something. What did he want? Congratulations? He seemed to sense my discomfort, then add, I know the secret is safe with you because you can't reveal it without betraying your own identity. Oh, poor Connor. Oh. No, I mumbled. I can't betray my identity. Yet. Connor brushed his hands together as if the matter were settled. So let's continue. When the three regents report that Prince Jaren is dead, this will be the time when, as the High Chamberlain, Lord Curwyn will stand and declare that a new king must be chosen. However, before he stands, I will come forward and announce that the regents are wrong about Jaren's death. That's when I will introduce you to the court. There'll be a bit of commotion initially, but Curwyn will have you brought to him. There will be several questions, a careful examination of you. It'll take some time, and no matter what they say, you must answer calmly and with confidence. You must keep your sharp tongue under control, and you must not make a single mistake. Can you do it? I can. That pleased Connor. Good. We'll work on your answers through much of today. Make sure you know everything to say, and of course, I'll be there to assist should you get into any trouble. I pushed my plate aside, unable to eat anything else. Connor pushed it back to me. You must have your energy today. I shoved my chair behind me and stood. You said you have proof I can offer them. What is it? Later, Connor said. You don't get that unless I'm certain you're going to be declared prince tonight. You only have a few hours to learn everything else you must. If you finished eating, are you ready to get started? I closed my eyes and tried to control my breathing. My heart raced at the prospect of all that lay ahead of me that day. No matter what Connor told me, or tried to teach me, one thing was certain. I was not, nor would I ever be ready. But that wasn't what he wanted to hear. So he looked at him and said, okay, let's begin. Connor drilled me nonstop for 4 hours. He refused to answer any knock on the door with more than an order of go away and denied my requests for a break to step outside and clear my head. I didn't care about most of what he told me, but I had to remember it for now, word for word, in order to repeat it back to him. Finally, in the late afternoon, Connor announced I was ready to go before the court. He declared himself an excellent teacher due to the fact that I had learned so much in such a short period of time. Little did he guess how much his student already knew. Yet there were a few things I did not know. Things I had been too young to understand when I left there as a child. Connor provided me the details of Jaren's early life with such intimacy that I had asked him how he could know so much. I read the Queen's diaries, he said. She wrote about Jaren often. Did she? It was impossible to sound as if I didn't care what my mother had really thought of me. And the curiosity burned my heart. I knew she loved me because all mothers love their children. But she had stood with my father when they first sent me away, and I never quite gotten over that. Jaren had the reputation for being a difficult child, I said. Did she ever forgive him for that? Connor smiled. Interesting choice of words, Sage, to assume she thought there was anything about Jaren that needed forgiveness. She believed he was just like her. He may have been difficult, but she loved him all the more for it. We had to move on quickly from that conversation. It was too close to me, too hard to think about. Connor also provided me with a convenient story of how I escaped the pirates. According to him, I had seen their ship approaching and escaped in a rescue boat moored to the ship. I had hidden in Avinian orphanages in fear all this time, coming forward only when I had heard rumors of the deaths of Ekbert and Aaron. I urged him to change the story a little. Have me hiding at Mrs. Turbledy's orphanage. That way, if any of them claim to know me, we can acknowledge it was me, but in disguise the entire time. Connor's face brightened. This is why you'll convince them tonight. You have a great gift for thinking fast when necessary. So when Connor announced that I was finally ready, I was not prepared for what happened next. He invited Mott into the room, who was carrying rope in one hand and a length of fabric in the other. Mott's face was pale as he entered the room, barely able to look at me. Are you ill? Connor asked him. No, sir. We can't do this. Then he glanced at Connor with moist eyes, and I understood. Mott shook his head. If you knew this boy, do it, I said, turning to Mott. It took all my strength to force the words out, knowing what was coming. You're Connor's miserable dog, aren't you? Without warning, Connor grabbed me around the neck where he held me while Mott tied my hands. I noticed he gave me a little slack on my wrist, but it didn't matter. Despite the churning inside me, I had to let Connor do what he was going to do. Then Connor released me. Amat tied a gag in my mouth. He still refused to look at me, but I saw deep creases in the lines of his face. He wasn't any happier about what was going to happen than I was. Remember, Mott, don't leave any marks, Connor said. Mott put a hand on my shoulder and for the first time looked into my eyes. He squeezed my shoulder gently as an attempt at an apology, then speared his fist into my gut. I stumbled backwards and fell onto the floor. It was difficult to draw in a breath, especially with the gag between my teeth, and I barely had time to recover before Mott yanked me to my feet again. He unfastened the top three buttons of my shirt, then walked behind me and hooked his arms through my elbows, pulling my bound hands tightly against me. I grunted from the pain in my shoulders and down my back, but he gave me no room for movement there. Connor withdrew a knife from a sheath and walked up close to me. He put the tip of the blade against my chest and held it there. I know it was Tobias who tried to kill you before, he said, but he couldn't do it because he's weak. A leader needs to be strong, Sage. Do you believe that? I didn't move. All I could focus on was the point of the blade. Of course you do. You killed Veldegrass Man when he tried to attack Imogene, so you can be strong and I admire that. But you must know when to be strong and when to give up control. In a very short time, you will become the leader of Carthia. Before that happens, I need to make it very clear what the arrangement will be between you and me. No marks, Master Connor, Mott said. Connor glared at Mott, clearly annoyed. But he lightened the pressure of his knife and said to me, you will be king in any decision a king may make. However, from time to time, I will have suggestions for you. You will obey them without question or hesitation. If you do not, I will expose you as a traitor to the crown, and believe me when I say I can do it with no danger to myself. If you do not obey me when I give the command, then you will be publicly tortured and hanged in the town square for treason. Princess Amarinda, if she is your wife by then, will be expelled from Carthia to forever live in humiliation. And if you have children, they will die of starvation and shame. Do you believe I can make this happen? I still did not move. Connor's face twisted in rage. He geared back and, with his free hand, punched me again in the gut. Mott still braced me from behind, so there was nothing I could do but bite down on the gag and groan in muted pain. He'd hit me two more times, once in the chest and once on my shoulder. Then he ripped me away from Mott and threw me on the floor. He knelt beside me and hissed into my ear, you are nothing other than what I have made you into. I have followed through on my threats to other royals. Attempt to betray me and meet their fate. Do you understand? I nodded, and he lifted me back into a sitting position. He said, in your first act as king, you will remove Veldegrath as regent. Tell the court you suspect Veldegrath may have something to do with your family's deaths, and you refuse to have him as a sitting regent in your court. Your second act as king will be to install me as your prime regent. I don't care who you replace Veldegrath with, though as your prime regent, I am happy to recommend names if you are unfamiliar with them. Do you agree to this? I nodded again. With his knife, Connor cut the ropes binding my wrists, then sliced through the gag on my mouth. As soon as he did, I spat at him. He wiped the spit off his face, then slapped me hard across my cheek. This would be easier if you accepted. What I want is a better situation for us both, he said. You are the lowest form of life Carthia has to offer, yet I am making you a king. Stop fighting me, Sage, and let us be friends. He seemed disappointed that I gave him no response. Then he stood and said to Mott, clean him up and get him dressed. I'll have Imogene bring something to eat very soon. Do not leave him alone until I return. Then he wiped his hands, straightened his jacket, and left the room. Oh, man. The amount of treason that is just racking up for Connor is ridiculous, isn't it?
He's going to be so...
As soon as Connor left, Mott was by my side, helping me off the floor and onto the bed. I rolled onto my back and groaned, holding my side. I think he cracked a rib, I said. He punches a lot harder than you do. To be fair, Your Highness, I was holding back, Mott said. I wanted to laugh, but over the past 2 weeks, I'd learned how much that could hurt. So I just closed my eyes while Mott unbuttoned the rest of my shirt and felt around for any injuries he might detect. Why didn't you let me tell him the truth, Mott asked. He's going to find out soon enough anyway, and you could have saved yourself all this pain. He'd never have believed it, I said. He should know who I am better than anyone. But all he can see is the boy from the orphanage. That's all he'll ever see of me. Perhaps so, Mott said. Other than a tiny cut on your chest, I can't see any damage. Trust me, there's damage. Couldn't you have stopped him? Only you could have. He began sliding my shirt down, my arms. I let him do all the work. What were you thinking by spitting at him in the end, begging for more? I answered with an ow as Mott pushed my left arm back too far. He apologized and moved more carefully. You are the biggest fool of a boy I've ever known, Mott said. Then his tone softened. But you will serve Carthia well. I wish I felt ready to do this, I said. The closer we come to the moment, the more I feel every defect in my character that caused my parents to send me away in the first place. From all I'm told, the prince was sent away was selfish, mischievous, and destructive. The king who returns is courageous, noble, and strong. And a fool, I added. Mott chuckled. You are that too. Getting dressed in the outfit Connor had planned for me took quite a while. It was fancier than the usual clothes we had at Farthenwood, and immediately reminded me of the one thing I never missed of castle life. The tunic was long and black with gold satin ribbon, running from the chest to the bottom hem. Beneath it I wore a white full-sleeved shirt that gathered at my wrist and was too tight on my neck. A deep purple cape hung from my shoulders, clasped with a gold chain that was heavier than it looked. Real gold? I asked. Mott nodded and offered me a pair of new leather boots and a ridiculous hat that had a long white feather in it. I took the boots and ignored the hat. I sat in front of a mirror as Mott combed my hair smooth and tied it back with a ribbon. Your cheek is still red from where he slapped you, he said, but it should fade before we reach the castle. I hope it stays. Let it remind Connor of how important he thinks he is to me. I caught Mott's eyes in the mirror. Do I have your loyalty? Mott nodded. You have my life, Prince Jaren. He finished by tucking down the collar of my jacket, then said, what do you think of yourself now? It's as good as I might expect to look. There was a knock on our door. Mott opened it, and Imogene walked in with a tray of food. Her eyes were red but dry. I wanted to ask Mott to leave so that I could speak with her, but I knew he had to obey Connor's order to stay. Besides, there was really nothing more I could say to Imogene that hadn't already been said. She would be the greatest casualty in this plan, which was entirely my fault. If it was possible to apologize to her, I didn't know how. She set the tray on the small table in the center of the room. Mott started to tell her to bring the tray over to me directly, but I held up my hand and said I'd come get the food. She must have noticed something different in the pained way I walked because she furrowed her eyebrows and looked questioningly at me. I smiled and returned, but I don't think she believed me. Do you want her to leave while you eat? Mott asked. Ignoring Mott, I asked her, have you eaten yet today? She cast a sideways glance at Mott, but I said, Imogene. It was my question, not his. She slowly shook her head. I uncovered the lid to my tray and found a deep dish meat pie and a thick slice of bread. There's more than enough for both of us. She mouthed the word no to me, but I pretended not to see it, and with my spoon dished her out a sizable portion, which I set on the plate where the bread had been. I handed it to her with a spoon and said I'd eat my half after she finished using the utensil. Have you eaten, Mott? I asked. I'd better have, because that meal won't split a third way, Mott said. Once Imogene began eating, she devoured the food as if it were the first she'd eaten in days. She finished her meat pie and then found the napkin and carefully wiped the spoon clean before handing it back to me. Do you want more? I asked. I'm not hungry. She shook her head and stood, backing away from the table with a bowed head. She comes to the castle with us tonight, I told Mott. It's not Connor's plan, Mott began. It's my plan, though. What have Tobias and Rodin been doing all day? Connor heard a rumor last night. He sent them into town to see if they can learn anything. What's the rumor? That there are other princes. Your other princes, Sage. It appears that Connor is not the only one with this plan. Yes, but Connor has an advantage the others don't, correct? What's Connor's advantage?
He is the real king.
He is the real prince. Mott returned my smile. Imogene noticed the exchange between us, but of course said nothing. Connor returned to the room just as I was finishing the meal. He had ordered Imogene to return the tray and Mott to wait outside. Then he shut the door behind us. He carried two bundles in his arms. You look good, he said. Better than I feel, I responded coolly. Connor looked at me without sympathy. I trust your bruises will keep my words in your memory for a long time. It was safe to say that I would never forget them. Bile rose in my throat every time I thought of his cursed words. I tilted my head at the bundles. What's in them? He began unwrapping the first smaller bundle. You've seen this before, he said, revealing the emerald-encrusted box. It belonged to Queen Erin. There is something about her that few people knew. Indeed, I did not know it myself until I took this box after her death and saw the contents. He slid a thin bronze key into the lock and opened the box. All I could see were a few folded papers. What are they? He handed them to me. You all put these in your pocket. I think we will have more than enough to earn your identity, but it's always wise to have a backup. I unfolded the papers, and an inadvertent gasp escaped me. I had known my mother was artistic, but did not appreciate her abilities while I was a child. It was a simple sketch of me at about the age I would have been when she and my father first sent me away. I became fixed on the way she drew my eyes, not with the arrogance or defiance that the castle artisan inevitably gave me, but with the subtle details only a mother would notice, as if she saw things about her son that everyone else missed. Looking at the pictures, I saw myself the way she must have seen me, and as I gently brushed the thumb over the drawing, I felt her love for me. Then I noticed Connor studying me as I looked at the drawing. I quickly folded it and shoved it in a pocket of my tunic. Connor continued to watch me. Prince Jaren? I scratched my face. Guess I'll have to get used to people calling me that. Do you think I can eventually pick up Sage as a nickname? No, you cannot. Connor smiled and his expression relaxed. But I suppose I should begin calling you Jaren to get you used to it. He hesitated. For a moment there, I thought, what's in the other package? I asked. It was a sufficient distraction. Ah, Connor set the box down and began unwrapping the other bundle. This is the proof that will seal your identity. When the prince boarded the ship that day 4 years ago, he was wearing his crown. It had been lost all this time, assumed to be at the bottom of the sea. Indeed, even if a diver had found it with the intention of putting forward a false prince, the medals and jewels of the crown would have been damaged by the salty waters. But see it for yourself. He finished unwrapping the bundle and pulled out the crown I had last worn on that ship. It was a circlet of gold with rubies set at the base of every arch. It was trimmed in braided gold bands. The crown had been made for me to grow into, so I suspected it would fit better now than it used to. It was in perfect condition, other than a dent I'd created when I fell from a tree once while wearing it. The pirates rescued this from the ship before it sank, Connor said. They presented it to me as proof of Jaren's death. I'd left the crown behind before I snuck off the ship. I had intended it as a symbol of my having abandoned the royal family forever. Face the mirror, Connor said. I obeyed and watched as he set the crown on my head. The weight of it resurrected a flood of memories for me. As of that moment, I was the prince again. And soon the entire country would know it. Okay. Connor's plan was for Cregan to drive him and me directly to the castle in time for the announcement. I argued that Tobias, Rodin, and Imogene should come with us, but Connor expressly forbade it. So I nodded at Imogene, then shook hands with Rodin. It's not too late to back out. Rodin's grip was powerful. You never wanted this. No, I never did. We had no disagreement there, but this is my future, not yours. A flash of anger crossed Rodin's face, but he backed off while I shook hands with Tobias. I think you're supposed to be the king, Tobias said, smiling. The stars are shining for you tonight. He must have felt the note I placed in his palm when we shook hands, and he hit it well when we pulled our hands apart. The ride to the castle was very quiet between Connor and me. He had started our ride by trying to quiz me on any last-minute details. I assured him that I knew everything I had to know and told him to leave me have my silence. I watched the castle rise into view as we approached. I hadn't been there in 4 years, and when I left, I had never expected to see it again. It was one of the younger castles in the surrounding region, and as such had borrowed heavily from other countries' architecture. It was built of the large granite blocks from the mountains of Mendenwall and used the round, heavy, decorative turrets of Weimar rather than the plain and square turrets common elsewhere. Like Gellion's architecture, the heart of the castle was tall and layered, while its wings were long and square, and small ledges extended beneath the windows. To the people of Carthia, it was the center of their government, a symbol of the king's power and a sign of the prosperity we had always enjoyed. To me, it was home. However, it quickly became apparent that we were not the only ones trying to get through the gates. A dozen carriages were ahead of us in line. One by one, a castle guard spoke to someone in the carriage at the front of the line. A few got through, but most were turned away. Connor leaned his head out the door and signaled to a carriage that had been refused entrance. "What's happening?" he asked the occupant. "Can't say exactly. Whatever I said to the guard, though, he waved us away. Can you imagine such rude treatment? I happen to have the long-lost son of Carthia, Prince Jaren, with me." I started to lean forward to get a better look at him myself, but Connor pressed me back into my seat. "Do all these carriages hold the missing prince?" Connor asked. "There are several frauds, I'm afraid. Several carriages contain nobles invited to the castle to greet whatever king is named tonight, and they are allowed through. But my boy, prince, is with me, so they have chosen poorly." "Let us hope that the correct boy is crowned tonight," Connor said, and then wished him well as our carriage moved forward. When we were alone again, Connor added, "His boy looked nothing like Prince Jaren. The guards must be screening for possibilities here at the gate, letting only the most probable candidates through. Don't worry, Sage, your resemblance is close enough to get us through." I wasn't worried. But when we reached the gate, Connor learned the truth about the screenings. The guard looked at me and arched an eyebrow. At least he was impressed. "Who is this?" he asked Connor. "Prince Jaren of Carthia, as you can plainly see. He must be presented at court before a new king is named." "I've seen many Prince Jarens tonight," the guard said. "Have you anything else to say?" This was a request for a code word. It's an old tradition amongst the royal family to have a code word in the event that an imposter ever tried to enter the castle, or if we had to enter the castle while in disguise. The guards at the gates of the castle were the only other ones who knew the code word even existed. If Connor had known the code, he would have asked if the queen planned to wear green at the dinner tonight, because it was the only color he had brought to match her dress. At least that had been the code 4 years ago. All Connor could do was shake his head. "I'm sorry," the guard said. "You may not enter the castle tonight." "But I'm Bevan Connor, one of the 20 regents." "Then what I meant to say is that you may enter," the guard flashed a glare at me. "The boy with you may not. He is Prince Jaren." "They all are." Connor yelled at Cregan to turn our carriage around. "Fools," Connor hissed, swatting at the carriage door with his hat. "Are we defeated so easily?" I leaned back in my seat. "There's a secret way into the castle." Connor stopped his swatting. "What? How do you know?" "I've used it." "You've been inside the castle? Why didn't you tell me?" "You never asked. There's a river that flows beneath the kitchen. As food is prepared, the garbage is dumped into the water and the river carries it away. The river is gated, but there is a key so that the gate can occasionally be cleared of larger obstructions." "And you have a key?" I pulled a pin from my jacket. Imogene hadn't felt me take it from her hair the night before. "I can pick the lock." Connor smiled, impressed with what he thought was my ingenuity. In fact, I'd suspected all along it might come to this. Thus, the pin. Connor's face fell as he further considered my suggestion. "We shall be filthy if we go that route, unfit to enter the throne room. The guard just now said you could enter through the gate. I can enter through the kitchen." Connor shook his head. "Absolutely not. We must stay together." Which, unfortunately, I also suspected he would say. So he shrugged it off and said, "We'll be fine on this route. There's a dirt path to the side of the river, wide enough that we can easily walk there single file. It'll lead us to the door into the kitchen. It's never guarded, but we'll need to help to restrain the kitchen servants while you and I continue on to the castle." "Mott, Tobias, and Rodin." Connor's eyes narrowed. "Did you know this would happen? Is that why?" "I brought them so you wouldn't kill them. There's one other condition. I don't want Cregan coming with us. Order him to stay back. But if he can help, he doesn't come." "Very well," Connor thought for a moment. "How do you know all of this?" "I ate from that kitchen a lot when I was younger." Oh, boy. Connor misinterpreted my answer and said, "For the first time, Sage, I'm glad to have chosen a thief and an orphan as my prince." Oh, my gosh. As my note had instructed, Mott, Tobias, Rodin, and Imogene were already waiting at the river entrance into the castle when we arrived. Connor looked surprised to find them there, but must have explained it away in his mind. He called to Cregan, "Take this carriage back to the inn and wait for us there. I don't want it here to arouse anyone's suspicions." "Have Tobias take it," Cregan said. "He's not useful for anything." "Then he's not useful for managing a carriage. Get going. We must hurry too before I fear we'll be late." I led the way up the river. Imogene was behind me, then Connor, then Tobias, Rodin, and Mott at the last. Almost immediately, a roof of dirt and rock rose over our heads as we entered a tunnel leading beneath castle grounds. The castle walls were not much farther ahead. I had found this entrance myself at age 8. The kitchen staff all knew how often I used it to sneak in and out of the castle grounds, but they liked me and never told anyone. I was finally found out when I fell into the river once and returned to the castle smelling of rotten fruit and moldy meat. "It smells horrible in here," Tobias said. "Nobody promised it'd be pleasant," I called back to him. As it grew darker, Imogene walked closer behind me. I noticed she kept one hand ready to grab my arm as she started to fall in. We reached the gate, which was in desperate need of a cleaning. The gate was clogged with large, rotting chunks of food and debris. It dammed up the water to a higher level of reeking muck than usual. "I'm going to be sick," Connor said, covering his nose with a handkerchief. "That smell!" I hid my smile, but do admit I enjoyed the fact that he was having a difficult time. I used the pin to pick the lock within seconds. It was an old lock with soft tumblers. Once I was king, I'd have to order a better security system placed there. We went through the gate, and after another few minutes of walking, I informed the group that we had passed beneath the castle walls. Now that we had come this far, we were provided a little light by occasional oil lamps. When servants came down there, they often had their hands full and needed a lit path. It wasn't much light, but we were grateful for it. "How much farther?" Connor asked. "Not far. Here the path widened, and we were able to walk several persons across." Connor caught up to Imogene and me. Tobias and Mott were behind us, and Rodin lagged behind. "Keep up, Rodin," Connor scolded. "We are pushing against time." Rodin answered with a shout of surprise. We turned to see what the trouble was. Cregan held him by the neck with his knife. "Cregan," Connor yelled, "what are you doing?" A group widened into a circle. Mott had his hand on his sword, but he wouldn't draw it, not unless Connor ordered it. And he'd wounded himself only 2 nights ago after I'd killed Veldegrath's man. He'd be a weakened opponent if he had to fight. "Change of plans," Cregan said. His mouth curved into a nasty sneer. "Your orphan boy won't be king after all." I took a step forward and nodded at Cregan. "But why threaten your own choice for king, Cregan?" Cregan grinned evilly and released Rodin and handed him his sword. Rodin didn't even have the courtesy to act surprised. He'd known all along that Cregan was following us. "You are traitors," Connor said. "Traitors to this plan, to Carthia, to me. Why, Cregan?" "I'm making my fortune. Once Rodin's on the throne, he'll make me a noble, and I'll take your place as regent. Won't be long before I take everything you have." Connor turned his glare to Rodin. "After all I've done for you, this is your repayment?" "You'd have left me at Farthenwood to die," Rodin said stiffly. "I owe you nothing." "Then I'll have no guilt in ordering your deaths," Connor said. "Mott, finish them." Before Mott was able to withdraw his sword, Cregan advanced with his knife and said, "Mott can't kill both Rodin and me before one of us gets to either you or your phony king. Rodin is better with a sword than you might imagine. I trained him myself." Rodin arched his head. "And for the brief time I was your prince, you told me everything I needed to know to convince the regents." "Not everything," Connor said. "You won't succeed." "Yes, I will," Rodin said. "Only Cregan and I go on from here. Hand me the crown, Sage. If you cooperate, everyone leaves in peace." Maybe Rodin believed that, but I could tell from the expression on Cregan's face that he had no plans for any of us to leave here alive. "Sir?" Mott asked. "Other than Cregan and Rodin, he was the only one carrying a weapon." "I don't know." For the first time since we met, Connor sounded weak. "I didn't expect..." "We're at a standoff," I said calmly. "Maybe you and Rodin will get one of us, but even with your small brain, Cregan, you must know that Mott will get to one of you too. Whether it's you or Rodin who falls, neither of you can win this way." Cregan's face fell. He had not expected us to call his bluff. "The stronger of us should be crowned," I continued. "Can we all agree on that?" Rodin nodded. Hesitantly, Cregan and Connor did as well. "Then Rodin and I fight. The winner goes on to the castle. Do you accept the challenge, Rodin?" "Your back is still injured," Mott warned. "Good point. If Rodin wants to make it a fair fight, then how about if I'm the only one with a sword?" I grinned, but nobody else liked the joke. Cregan licked his lips, savoring the idea of seeing me fall. "It was never going to be a fair fight, boy. Rodin's too strong." Rodin looked back at Cregan, then to me. "Okay, the winner advances to the throne. Please give me the crown instead, Stage. I don't want to kill you." "Lucky coincidence. I don't want to be killed." That infuriated him. "Stop making a joke of this. As if I'm no threat. I'm better at the sword than you might think, and I've seen you fight." I removed the crown from my head and handed it to Mott. "Don't let it get dirty. Let me have your sword." "It's heavier than the prince's was," Mott said. I locked eyes with him. "Mott, your sword." With an obedient nod, he handed it to me. Rodin attacked immediately while I was still facing Mott. One of the advantages of being a left-handed person who had been forced to train with his right, I blocked his advance with my left hand, then rotated towards him and struck him hard on his weaker side. Rodin stumbled back with an expression of surprise at my abilities. Sage had not really been fighting like he can, right? How good is Jaren with a sword?
Good.
He is very good with a sword. He's never shown them that though, right? He quickly advanced again and swung harder at me. He'd improved significantly since I last fought him, and those were only in practices. This time, his blows were intended to kill, and he watched for me to make even the tiniest mistake. "You were faking before," he said, parrying my thrust. "You've been trained to fight." "If you knew my father, you'd know that I was trained for show. He never intended me to actually fight." Rodin smiled and cut towards me, aiming low. "I'm still better than you." "Perhaps, but I'm handsomer, don't you think?" That took Rodin off guard, and I was able to swing around and kick him in the side. He fell to the ground, but kept his sword ready. I started towards him with my blade, and all it would take was a quick slash, and this match would be over, but I hesitated. Could I strike after promising to save his life if he wasn't chosen a prince? Did I still owe him that? I backed up to higher ground. This match would not end with his death. "You could have killed me there," Rodin said, leaping to his feet and advancing. "Why didn't you?" "Oh." Rodin came to his own answer. He grinned as he engaged my sword again. "I should have known from when you stabbed Veldegrath's man. You don't have the stomach for killing. Unfortunately for you, I do." Then he brought his sword down from over his head. The force of the blade crashed against mine, set me off balance, and stumbled down the bank. In the limited space we had between the wall and the water, Roden continued, edging me towards the river. I didn't like the idea of falling in. I'd lose the sword fight and possibly my life, and I'd also end up smelling really bad. Our blades moved faster and harder, but Roden's confidence was unshakable. If Cregan had chosen him for his natural ability, then he had chosen well. I wished Roden could be on my side after this, because he'd make an excellent captain of the guard. Finally, my boot hit on a rock, throwing me off balance, and Mott's sword fell from my hand. I dove for it, but it slid into the river. Behind us, Cregan laughed, sensing victory. Roden lowered his sword and walked up to me, his blade near my throat. I arched my head and backed into a squatting position, but the blade followed me. "Do you offer mercy?" I asked. "If you accept that I win this challenge, if you concede that I win and give me the crown, then you and the others may go in peace. That is the mercy I offer. I am Prince Jaren." "If you are Jaren, then you never fall for a simple trick like this." I flung my leg to the side and swept it beneath Roden's feet. He landed on his back with a hoarse groan. I grabbed the rounded edge of the blade and wrenched it from his grasp, then stood and aimed it at his throat. Roden closed his eyes. "It's what you said you would do on the very first day." Do you remember what? To ask how he would win that sword fight? Beg for mercy and then finish it off? That's exactly what he did. He mumbled, "Beg mercy and trick your opponent. I'd forgotten." "No," Cregan yelled, "not him." He ran at me with his knife outstretched. Mott stepped between us and grabbed his hand, twisting it behind his back. To regain his balance, Cregan clutched at the crown in Mott's other hand. Mott stabbed him in the back with the knife, and Cregan fell into the water, pulling the crown in with him as well. Blood seeped through the water as both the crown and Cregan's body were carried away downstream. "I surrender," Roden said, lowering his head. "Do what you must." I placed a hand on his shoulder and pulled my sword away. "I'd have brought you with me into the court, Roden. We could have been friends." Roden shook his head. "I don't need friends. All I wanted was the throne. Please just kill me here." My words had been sincere, and it was difficult to remove my hand. "Go away then. Run, and never find me again." Roden looked up at me in an attempt to determine whether it was another trick, but I motioned with my head for him to leave and lowered the sword. Wordlessly, Roden scrambled to his feet and ran out of the tunnel. His footsteps echoed in the tunnel until he'd gotten too far for us to hear him anymore. "The crown," Connor said, standing near the edge of the dark water. "There's a chance it'll get carried on Cregan's body back to the gate," Tobias said. "It's probably sunk already," Connor said. "Let me try to find it." Tobias turned to me. "Sage, when you are king, let me be one of your servants." "Be my friend instead," I said. "Go find the crown." Tobias bowed and ran back down the river. Above us, we could hear the faint tolling of bells. "The meeting's begun," Connor shouted. "We have to hurry. There's only minutes to spare." I started forward, then gasped and stumbled to my knees. "You're hurt?" Mott cried, then called to Connor. "Wait, I can help him." Imogen didn't flinch in the moment of Connor and Mott's shock at hearing her speak, but continued. "You two secure the kitchen and stall the meeting. I can get Sage there." Connor's strained voice revealed the panic he felt. "Sage, just get to the meeting." I looked directly at Mott. "Go now." Mott nodded and took Connor's arm. "Sir, Prince Jaren will be there. Let's go." "I will get there in time," I told Connor. "Have Mott secure the kitchen for us." They ran ahead, and Imogen knelt beside me, asking, "You knew about Roden and Cregan. How?" It was their last chance to make Roden the prince. She reached for the hem of her skirt, intending to tear off strips for a bandage. "Where are you hurt?" "Nowhere. Everything's fine, really." I smiled and held out my arms to prove it. I just needed a reason to get separated from Connor. "Do you think Mott has secured the kitchen yet?" "I don't know. I don't understand. You faked that injury? I've got to go now. There's not much time left." I stood to leave, but she grabbed my arm. "Your crown? I won't need it. Sage, will you make me one promise, Imogen?" She pressed her lips together, then said, "What is it?" This was harder to ask than I'd expected, but I forced the words out. "Next time we meet, things will be different. Will you try to forgive me?" "Forgive you for what? Becoming the prince? Because I understand now why you're doing it." "No, you don't, but you will. And if there is any reason to forgive me, will you try to do it?" She nodded. There was so much trust in her eyes, so much innocence. She had no idea what she was agreeing to. I kissed her cheek, then said, "Wait here until Tobias returns with the crown. With that, he'll be able to get you both through to the throne room. I wish I could take you with me, but this last part I have to do alone." "Go then, and may the devils give you clearance." The devils wouldn't be a problem. It was the regents I needed on my side. Oh, my throat is starting to hurt. Okay, let me stop this one more time. A meeting of the regents was in full progress when Connor breathlessly entered the throne room. I'm obviously used to a hoodie because I keep trying to put my hand here. It's really bothering me. Okay. breathlessly entered the throne room. He was the only one who had come in late, and his arrival caused an unwelcome disruption. If there were any occasion for you to arrive on time, Lord Connor, this would have been it. The man who spoke was Joth Curwen, High Chamberlain to King Ecgbert. He was almost as much a part of the castle as the bricks and mortar, having served the king for his entire life. He wasn't a large or powerfully built man, quite the opposite, in fact, and yet he commanded a room of 1,000 with just the wave of his hand. There was no one who had been more loyal to King Ecgbert, and few who had ever loved Carthia so much. The lines on his aging face told the story of years of worry and the weight of counseling royalty on their most difficult decisions. Now he was facing the greatest task of his career, peaceably finding a new king for Carthia. Because if civil war broke out amongst the different factions vying for the throne, Carthia's enemies would use the opportunity to advance on the country and destroy it. Connor gave a polite bow to Curwen. My lord, High Chamberlain, I had trouble getting here. Forgive me, please. There were 19 other regents in the room, seated according to their rank at a long rectangular table. Connor's place was near the end, but he hoped that by the close of the evening, he would replace Veldegrath at the head of the table. This was a vain and largely useless group. Few had ever worked a real day in their lives, even if they knew of the risk and expense Connor had undergone to bring a prince to the throne. They would never appreciate the valiancy of his efforts. Connor accepted that it was his role to save Carthia, but this collection of stiff-necked, silk-wrapped snobs would never understand that. You may take your seat, Curwen said. I've already made the announcement formally declaring King Ecgbert and his queen and son to be dead. In only moments, the death bell will toll one round for each royal. Almost immediately, the bells sounded throughout the castle. Their ring would carry beyond the outskirts of the capital city and would signal to the commoners that a royal had died. Three patterns of the bells would confirm the rumors were true, that the entire royal family was gone. When the bells fell silent, Curwen continued, Lords Mead, Becket, and Hentower, who traveled to Isil this past week, have confirmed for us that Prince Jaren must have died in the pirate attack 4 years ago. Therefore, we are left with no alternative but to... There is something more to that story. Connor's words were smug and tilted towards the self-righteous. This was a speech he had practiced so often in his head that he could repeat it in his sleep. May I speak, Lord Curwen? Curwen nodded a permission to him, and Connor stood. With deference to my fellow regents who searched for proof of Jaren's death this past week, they are wrong. Prince Jaren survived the pirate attack 4 years ago. He still lives. He is the rightful heir to the throne and should be crowned this night the King of Carthia. Veldegrath stood, pointing a long finger at Connor. Then I was right. You did have him hidden at your home. Only for his protection, Lord Veldegrath. Until now, surely you can see how his being alive may threaten anyone else who hoped to become king tonight. Is that an accusation? Veldegrath began hurling obscenities at Connor. The two regents on either side of him held him back, and other regents around the table murmured loudly to one another. Finally, Curwen stepped forward. So where is this prince of yours, Lord Connor? He's coming. As I said before, we had trouble getting here. Naturally, you did. I'm told there were several Prince Jarens who had trouble getting here. Connor spoke above the chuckles of his peers. They didn't let anyone through the gate. No doubt the prince will punish the guards for failing to recognize him. If he were the prince, he would have known how to get through. The royals always know how to get through. He must have forgotten. Connor's face paled, and he held to the table for support. But Prince Jaren will be here. Then you'll see. Hearing footsteps in the hallway, he turned to the doors of the throne room expectantly. Almost if on cue, someone did enter, but it was not who he'd hoped to see. Mott? Connor said. Only regents are allowed in this meeting, Veldegrath said. You may wait with the other guests and nobles in the great hall. That's where the new king will greet his people. But Mott seemed to see only Connor in the room. He isn't here? He came through the kitchen a long time ago. Perhaps your false prince is lost in the castle, another regent said. To laughter in the room. He grew up here. Of course he's not lost. It was an attempt at confidence, but desperation cut too clearly through Connor's words. I propose we continue this meeting. Veldegrath waited until all eyes were on him and then added, we must not keep the people waiting. And I'm sure whoever is chosen as king will want to speak to Lord Connor on the subject of treason. Then something must have happened in the adjoining room. The great hall where hundreds of citizens had gathered to wait for the announcement of the new king. What had been a steady hum of conversation suddenly fell completely silent. Behind Mott, a castle servant burst through the doors. Forgive me, Regents, he said, forgetting the customary bow of his head, but you should all come into the great hall as quickly as possible. Although there were 20 men and women of great status and power, well-trained in decorum and manners, no one would have known it by the way they hurried from the throne room. The only one who did not push his way out was Kerwin, who slipped through a secret door between the throne room and the great hall. He was the first to see what had caused the entire room in the great hall to fall silent, for Prince Jaren was standing at the head of the room. I was in no hurry. All that mattered was the order in which I completed this plan. I stood on the dais at the head of the room, the platform reserved for royalty or the courtiers required near them in this formal setting. Behind me were the thrones of the king, queen, and Darius. Jaren's throne was no longer here. I wondered how long I'd been gone before it was carried away. The room was filled with a few hundred people, none of whom I recognized, but they clearly recognized me. I had come through a door connecting directly from the private rooms of the royal family. There was no announcement of my arrival, but apparently it hadn't been necessary. Their wide eyes and total silence while staring at me confirmed that. I saw Kerwin come through the door from the throne room, where he and the other regents had been meeting. Him, I recognized. He'd hardly changed over the past 4 years, still a powerful presence and someone I'd always respected. From his expression, it was obvious he knew who I was supposed to be, but he seemed to be fighting his own eyes. "Who are you?" Kerwin asked, cautious as always. "The first order of business was to withdraw my sword." What did I tell you?
He knew where the real sword was.
Yeah, it's a sword. But the real sword belonging to Prince Jaren. Before leaving the castle 4 years ago, I'd hidden it beneath a loose floorboard in my old room. It's a very common hiding place for him and that sword, right?
Yeah, he did it at
the room. Yep. Accessible only by crawling under the bed. My room had remained exactly as it was the night I left. My sword was still there as well, and other than a thin blanket of dust, it looked exactly as it had been before. I balanced the sword horizontally on both hands and knelt before Kerwin as he approached me. "You know me, Lord Kerwin. I am that boy who burned the throne room, the boy who challenged the King of Mendenwald to a duel. I am the younger Prince of Carthia. I am Jaren." A whisper passed through the room. Kerwin seemed unimpressed, but he was still listening. I stood, but pointed to a nick in the blade of the sword. After I lost the duel to that king, I threw this sword in anger, and it hit a sharp corner of the castle wall. You later returned to me privately and said that if I don't respect my sword, no one will respect me. Then you apologized because you had also heard what the king said about my mother, but you hadn't dared to challenge him. Kerwin faltered a moment, then recovered. Someone could have overheard that. Perhaps so, but it was I you spoke to that day. Without taking my eyes off of his, I reached into my pocket and pulled out a small golden rock. It was the last gift my father had ever given me inside that satchel at the church. Since I stole it back from Connor, it had never been hidden especially well. Anyone who wished to venture high under the ledges in Farthenwood would have found it. Later, I moved the rock to the bank of the stream on the outskirts of Connor's estate, where it hid in its careful place amongst the thousands of other ordinary rocks. "This is for you." I pressed the stone into Kerwin's hand. Kerwin turned it over in his hands, unimpressed. "Imitator's gold? It's worthless." "No, it's real gold. And I am real, Lord Kerwin." What was so important about that rock?
He needed it to come home.
This was the plan to get him home. Tears filled Kerwin's eyes. He pulled a creased and worn paper from his pocket and unfolded it. His hands shook increasingly as he read it. Then he turned to the audience and said, "This note was given to me by King Ecbert about a month after Prince Jaren's ship was attacked 4 years ago. I was instructed to keep it with me at all times and to read it only if someone ever came forward claiming to be the prince. This is what it says," he read aloud. "Many may one day claim to be the lost Prince of Carthia. They will be well rehearsed, and some may even look the part. You will know Prince Jaren by one sign alone. He will give you the humblest of rocks and tell you it is gold." Kerwin folded the paper again and then said to the audience, "Lords and ladies of Carthia, I present to you the son of King Ecbert and Queen Erin. He is the lost royal of Carthia who lives and stands before you. Hail, Prince Jaren." Then he turned to me and fell to his knees. He took my hand in his and pressed the note into my palm and kissed the back of my hand. In turn, everyone in the room sank to their knees and said, "Hail, Prince Jaren." Kerwin looked up at me, and a single tear fell onto his cheek. Your pants are filthy, as if you rolled in the dirt before coming here. I would expect nothing less from the boy I remember. I smiled. I've come home. Do you know me now? In a crowd of 1,000 boys claiming to be the prince, there would be only one with the same look of trouble in his eye. I promise never to forget you again. Suddenly, as well as I thought I had everything planned out, I was at a loss. Should I tell them to rise or issue a command? They were all watching me, waiting for what I'd do next. There was only one person in the room who had failed to kneel. Bevan Connor stood at the back of the room, frozen. I walked into the crowd, which stood and magically parted before me. Connor found his words and spoke them slowly. It cannot be. I suspected it once or twice, but was I blind? You saw who you wanted to see, Connor, nothing more. He sees nothing but a fraud, and so do I, Feldegrath said from behind me. This is clearly an impostor. I turned and smiled at him. You are relieved of your duties as Prime Regent, Lord Feldegrath. Then to Connor I said, see how I keep my promises? For now, you are my Prime Regent. Connor didn't return the smile. He was still more frozen than not. You cannot do this, Feldegrath sneered. Who are you, really? I heard Connor combed through the orphanages of Carthia. No doubt he found you there amongst the other fleas and vermin. He did. I lived in several orphanages at various times and went by the name of Sage. Trace my records back as far as you can. You'll find the first entry about 4 years ago, shortly after Jaren disappeared. Feldegrath laughed at that. So you admit to being one of them? Now you expect me to bow before you? I grinned. You're right, that is funny. Then I laughed with him, laughed so hard that I put a hand on his shoulder to better share the joke. He didn't appreciate that and slid my hand away, like brushing an earwig off his clothes. With my other hand, I lifted a coin from his vest and then rolled it away on my fingertips. His laughter ceased. Another chorus of whispers echoed through the room. You know me, don't you, Lord Feldegrath? He rubbed his silver ring as the sign of anxiety washed over his face. I nodded at his ring. I stole that from you once, right off your finger. You remember that, I'm sure. It was hours before you noticed, and you told my mother I was incorrigible. So see, he was stealing things even when he was young. Apparently, little has changed, Feldegrath muttered. More loudly, I asked, do you have guards in here? Escort Lord Feldegrath out of this castle. I flipped his coin back at him. Come up with any questions you may have to verify my identity. We'll meet again soon, and I promise that I will satisfy you. Two guards appeared on either side of Feldegrath. One took his arm and began to pull him away. But he shrugged them off and said, no, Your Highness. Now that I see you up close, there will be no questions. Then, like a scolded dog, he walked out ahead of the guards. I have questions, a voice said again behind me. This voice I had also heard before. It was the one person I least wanted to see, though it was the most inevitable. The betrothed Princess Amarinda stood in the center of the aisle I had created by walking there. Her hair was much fancier than the last time we met, piled high on her head and full of curls and ribbons. She wore a square neck cream-colored dress, intricately patterned in gold tones and trimmed to match the ribbon in her hair. She would have already heard the bells tolling for the deaths of the royal family. I could only imagine the pain she must have endured this evening, wondering who had been chosen as the new ruler of Carthia and what he would do about her. No matter what her anticipation might have been for tonight, one thing was certain. She did not expect me. I walked over to her and gave a polite bow. Princess, it is good to see you again. The hard expression on her face made it clear that she did not feel the same way. Aware of the many eyes on us, I moved closer to her and whispered, can we talk? Her tone was icy. Talk with whom? A brazen servant? A ragged orphan? Or a prince? With me? Here in public? I hesitated and she added, we'll make a scene if we're only talking. Dance with me.
You want me to come in and read with you or no?
No, because what I'm doing is I'm recording it. So I'm going to have you guys listen to it. Okay. I don't want you to come in now. We're literally pages away. Okay? Otherwise, I'd say yes. Dance with me. I started to protest, but she was right. A dance might be the best shield for the conversation we had to have. So I nodded at the musicians in the corner to begin a song. With little attempt at concealing her disgust, she took my hand and moved with me to begin the steps. The cut on your cheek is still there, though much improved from what it was before, she finally said. It was never intended that you notice me that night, I explained. Then you should not have spoken to me the way you did. I sometimes lack the talents of knowing when to speak and when to keep quiet. That is not true, she snapped. Then she took a deep breath and fell back into the rhythm with the dance. You had every opportunity to be honest with me. about the one thing that mattered most. It was no lack of talent. You designed it that way. I never lied to you that night, not once. Even after I begged for it, you failed to tell me the truth. Only the devils know the difference between that and a lie. You have hurt and insulted me. I had no answer to that and only said, "You will never find me dishonest with you again, princess. I hope not. Neither spare your feelings nor mine. How shall I address you now? You're no longer sage." The dance step called for me to lean to my right. If she noticed me wince from the ache in my ribs, she didn't acknowledge it. When I stood straight, I could speak again. "Call me Jaren. You dance like a royal Jaren, better than your brother did. Don't compare me to him." She stiffened. It was my attempt at a compliment. "Darius and I are very different people. If you think of him when you think of me, I'll always be a failure to you." Her eyes fluttered, blinking back tears, and we fell into silence. We both knew there was more to be said, much more, and yet we completed the rest of the dance without another word. As the music ended, Amarinda pulled away from me. "What happens now for me?" "Whatever you want," I said. "All I want is to be happy," she said softly, "but I fear that is too much to ask." My smile at her was weak and apologetic. I hadn't caused my brother's death, but I was a consequence of it. "We'll talk later in private." She agreed, though the look of disgust had returned to her face. "May I have your permission to leave now? I'm upset and wish to be alone." I nodded at her, and Amarinda disappeared into the crowd. I was again alone in a sea of strangers. Still at the head of the room, Kerwin said, "Your Highness, there must be a ceremony to make your new title official. I regret that your old crown is long lost. "I have it!" Tobias pushed forward through the crowd, holding something wrapped in a kitchen towel in his arms. He was wet and smelled terrible. Oh, horrible. I wondered how he made it this far into the castle. He'd stopped when he saw me and bowed. "So you were the prince all along. Why couldn't I see it?" Then his face paled. "Oh, the crimes I've committed against you? You committed them against an orphan named Sage. You've done nothing to Jaren." Tobias nodded and unwrapped the towel. "Your crown, my prince." Connor was suddenly there beside me. He grabbed the crown and said, "I am his prime regent. It is my duty to crown him in the ceremony." As we walked forward together, Connor whispered, "If you forgive me here, I will serve you forever. On your terms, Jaren." I said nothing. Although it did not go the way he had intended, Connor's plan was complete. Mine was not. The ceremony to crown me king went by very quickly. Kerwin produced the Book of Faith, which Connor read from to administer the blessing of the king. When it was finished, Kerwin gave him a ring, which Connor placed on my finger. "This belonged to King Ecbert," Connor said. "It was your father's." The king's ring. It was heavier than I'd expected, made of gold and imprinted with my family crest. It was too large and looked funny on my hand, like something I'd stolen rather than inherited through birthright. Then he lifted from a ruby red pillow my crown, still wet from having been washed. "This is a prince's crown. A new one will be commissioned for you immediately, but it'll do for now." He placed it on my head, this time with much humbler and gentler hands than he had crowned me at the inn. Connor went to his knees again and said, "Hail, King Jaren." "Hail, King Jaren," the audience echoed. "Be a better king than your father was," Connor said softly. "You come to the throne at a time of great upheaval." "There is always upheaval," I said. "Only the reasons for the troubles change." "You have the betrothed princess. She will support you." "She hates me." "So do I, and I just crowned you king." Connor smiled as he said it, but it probably wasn't a joke. "I kept my promise to you," I said, still keeping my voice quiet enough so that only he could hear us. "You have the position you want." "You are the true king," Connor said. "You may place me anywhere you desire." "So I shall." Then more loudly I added, "I want the prime regent, Lord Bevan Connor, arrested for the attempted murder of Prince Jaren 4 years ago. Arrest him for the murder of an orphan boy named Latimer, and also for the murders of King Ecbert, Queen Erin, and Crown Prince Darius." Whispers and hisses flew through the room. Connor turned to me with panic-stricken eyes. "No, I didn't." From a pocket of my jacket, I pulled out a small vial. "This is oil pressed from the Dervinus flower," I said. It took me a long time to figure out what sort of poison might have killed my family. Entire night searching through the books in your library. I'm not a great reader, that's true, but if the subject matters interests me, I can comb through books quite quickly. Oddly enough, I found the answer in a book in your bedroom. Dervinus oil is tasteless and requires only a single drop to produce a lethal dose. But it doesn't kill immediately. A person will go to sleep feeling fine and never wake up again. Dervinus oil is hard to come by. yet this was in a strong box in your office. Connor shook his head, then his eyes darted left, and he thrust his hand inside his jacket. As I always said, Sage, if I go down, so do you. But he failed to find what he was looking for. He drew back and searched his jacket. I released the cuff of my sleeve, and a knife he had hidden in his jacket fell into my hands. If this is what you wanted, then I shall have to increase the charges against you. Two guards appeared on either side of Connor, and each took his arm. I can't imagine the pleasure you must be taking in this moment, he said nastily. My temper flared. Pleasure? I'm staring at the man who killed my family. Whatever I feel now, trust that pleasure is the furthest from these feelings. You said you were my prince. Is that what that means to you? I am your prince, but I am Carthia's king. You'll understand why in the hierarchy of my titles, you must lose. Why didn't you tell me from the beginning? If you had told me who you were, then I couldn't have unmasked you. I'd have doomed my own rule, just as my family was doomed. Behind me, Kerwin sighed, addressing Connor, he said, what if Jiren had been only an orphan? Surely you couldn't have expected him to fool the court for long. He didn't need much time, I said, keeping my eyes on Connor. He needed a prince only long enough to get himself named Prime Regent. No matter what happened afterwards, he would become the controlling power in Carthia. Well done, Connor said. Jiren was always described as a clever boy, but I underestimated you. I started to wave my hand to dismiss him, but Connor added quickly, you are guilty of crimes too, Your Majesty. Facing him full on, I arched an eyebrow. Oh? Even when you said you didn't want the throne, you were all that time plotting to get it. You lied to me. Seriously? Oh, anger surged through me, and I didn't disguise it well. I leaned close to him and hissed, I did tell you. Okay. I did tell you lies, Master Connor, but none of consequence. I was telling the exact truth when I said I had no desire to be king. If there were anyone I felt could take my place without the entire kingdom's collapse, I would gladly step aside. If I could return to be that boy you snatched from the orphanage, I'd leave now and never look back. If you knew what it meant to be king, he sighed and I shook my head. Of all Carthians, I am the least free. And what of my freedom, Connor asked. Shall I beg for mercy? Beg mercy from the devils. I spoke more calmly now. You said you would sell your soul to them for this plan. Your plan worked, and the devils may have you. If the devils have me, then you are their king. Connor spat at me. I will forever curse the day we met. Take him to the prison. I told my guards, he will be there for some time. Connor, it appears that you will be unavailable to fulfill your duties as prime regent. Therefore, you are relieved of that position and stripped of your title as a noble. Once Connor was dragged out of the room, I directed the musicians to play. Then exhausted, I fell into my father's throne. No, my throne. I was king now. The reality of that was incomprehensible. One by one, various members of the audience came forward to greet me personally. I didn't know most of them, though I recognized several of their family names. They had been of little interest to me when I was 10 and weren't much more interesting now. You have come home to a country that mourned your loss these past 4 years, Kerwin said, standing beside me. See your people celebrate you. Will you join them? It wasn't that simple. I still feel like the boy in the orphanage, I murmured. I'm lost here, but this is your home. I traced my finger along a carving in the armrest of the throne. It was my home because my family was here. I'm alone now, and I don't even know where to begin. You are still young, Jiren. Perhaps a steward would be appropriate. I'm king now, no one else. Kerwin dipped his head in acknowledgement of that and stared with me across the audience, quietly said, not everyone will welcome your return. The enemies at our borders will feel tricked. There will be anger. I know. War is coming, Jiren. A fact I understood down to my bones. Despite that, I looked up at him and cocked an eyebrow. But surely their spies cannot travel so fast as to ruin this night. There is still a little time to laugh. He started to object, but I stood and said, they must see me laugh, Kerwin, at least for tonight. With that, I walked into the audience. Again, they parted for me. This time, I saw the person I'd been looking for all evening. Imogen stood at the back of the room, looking very small and frightened. When I approached her, she lowered herself into a bow and remained that way. Please rise, I said. It's still me. She obeyed, but shook her head. No, I don't think it is. How much did you see? All of it, Your Highness. Must you call me that? Her voice faltered. I must. Do you forgive me? Can you? She lowered her eyes. If you command it, then I will. What if I don't command it? Please don't ask me that. Kerwin came up beside me. And who is this, King Jiren? I took her hand and led her to the center of the group. She is a lady in disguise, just as I was disguised as an orphan for 4 years. She is Imogene, and her family has debts to Master Connor. She has fully repaid those debts to me these past 2 weeks in expert nursing care and compassion. Her father is dead, but using my power as king, I posthumously declare him a nobleman of Carthia. She is a nobleman's daughter and will be treated as such. Imogene shook her head. No, don't. I can't repay this. I turned to her and lowered my voice. Imogene, you owe me nothing. You are free, and I wish you well in life. I gave her hand to Kerwin. Will you see that she is given a comfortable room and dressed to fit her title? She may stay as long as she wishes, and at whatever point she asks it, see that she is provided a way home. She smiled through her tears and bowed to me. Thank you, King Jaren. I smiled back at her. Thank you, Imogene. I wouldn't have survived these past 2 weeks except for you. Kerwin led her away, and when he looked back at me, I could almost see a new weight fall upon his shoulders. Difficult times were ahead for Carthia and for me, but even pending war should never ruin a good party. With a smile on my face, I turned to the group and said, Carthians, tonight I am home again. Let it be a celebration. Tonight we dance. And that's the end.
Is the Runaway King next?
Yep. We'll start that after break. Okay, so you guys have 30 minutes. Here's what I want you to do for parlay. Oh, actually, go get me. I'm going to record this. Okay, here's what I want you guys to do for parlay. I think I have once again put some videos in parlay for this seminar, okay? But instead of you answering all of those questions, what I want you to do is either answer one of those questions, one, not all of them, one, or pose your own question, okay? Does everybody understand? That's what you're going to be doing on parlay for tomorrow's seminar, okay? So you are answering one of those questions well, or you are asking your own question. Tell me, which one takes more thought? But it has to be a good question. Don't ask a weak one. Got it? So you guys have 30 minutes. Feel free to read Frank Abagnale in Common Lit, or get on, go down to, I think it's the Frank Abagnale seminar, and you guys can watch those videos, and you guys can do that. Got it? So you guys have 30 minutes of work time. Okay?